Okay. Ms. Michelson, did everybody return?
I'm checking right now. I do not see Dr. Gill.
Do I see Dinah?
Yes. I see Dr. Gill. Is Ms. LeBoy? Yes, she's here.
I believe we have everybody.
I'm here. This is Dinah. Dr. Davy, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. I had you up at the top of my list, but somehow you got down there. All right. I appreciate it. And Mr. Schaefer is still here. So if Ms. Michelson, if you could unmute Mr. Schaefer. Mr. Schaefer, let's get to the question at hand here. And really the question is, you're seeking to return to the state of Arizona, where you have signed a consent agreement. Why don't you take a few moments to articulate to the board your plans as you enter here, as it relates to one, working with a supervisor, working with a mentor, the job you're going to hold. Why don't you walk us through your plans as you come back into as you request essentially or seek the ability to come back and practice in the city?
So, as directed by the BACB, I was required to start a mandatory mentorship by September 30th. I did start that with the BCBA in Colorado, and the BACB changed their requirements to make it acceptable to be done remotely. And it's been very effective and actually enjoyable having this mentor. And, you know, we talk about all the things related to this case. And, you know, even without the mentor, I've learned extremely valuable lessons from all of this. But my plan, I did receive an offer for a job with the mentor network, working with adults. And unfortunately, during the background check, they came across this disciplinary action, and I'm waiting to hear if I'll actually be able to work there, because once again, an employer is investigating this, and chances are, based on history, I'll lose this job as well. So I don't even know what's going to happen. I'm waiting to hear from them. But if all goes well, I'm just going to be I believe a senior BCBA at this company and help design behavior intervention programs for adults living in residential settings. And I will be meeting with my mandatory mentor prescribed by the BACB until September of 2022. And does that answer the question?
Yes.
Mr. Schaefer, when you accept a job offer, even during your interview time, are you sharing what has happened?
I try not to share during the interview. You know, in Colorado, I kind of took turns deciding if I was going to be upfront about it or just kind of like a don't ask, don't tell thing, because I'm not obligated to disclose this information. If I am asked on a background check or an application, I'm 100% honest, as I was in this case. And I did have a job in Colorado for about 6 months. And then somehow they found out about the consent agreement online by looking me up. And HR immediately let me go, even though my clinical director and the regional director defended me and fought for me and thought I was doing a great job. So it's hard. It's been extremely stressful deciding, you know, if I want to be upfront about it or not. You know, at the end of my time in Colorado, I had about 3 jobs in 6 weeks and it was too stressful. So then I started just being upfront about it and I wasn't getting any jobs. And that's when I had to move back here. And I finally got this job with the mentor network and I wasn't.
Do they know?
What?
Do they know that you're in a consent agreement with the Board of Psychologists examiners?
They didn't until the background check. I had received the offer, signed the offer, and then on a background check, it asked if I was subject of any disciplinary action. So obviously I was honest and said yes, and they looked it up, and they're they know, and I'm literally waiting to hear today from the legal department at this company if I'll be able to move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Caterino.
Mr. Schaefer, when you said you're going to be designing behavior plans, will you be working directly with the adults or just designing the plans?
You know, they purposely kept the job description pretty vague. I'm the first BCBA they're hiring, and I believe I will be designing behavior plans for certain clients with challenging behaviors in these residential settings. I don't think I will be seeing them very often, as far, I'm not providing any direct services. I'm kind of just supervising from afar, but you know, as a BCBA, I would hold it to my own standards to see these clients I'm treating in person at least once a week or every other week, and talk to the direct service providers. So I'll mostly just be supervising as I was at any other sensor-based location with the caseload.
Are you aware that at the meeting we had, there had been possibility of, had you stayed in Arizona, there would be certain requirements we could follow?
I was aware that I would probably receive the same things I received from the BACB, which was just a mandatory mentor and CEUs. It was never stated anywhere that there would be anything beyond that. And considering I already have a mentor, I was hoping that mentor would suffice. And as he stated, he's willing to talk to you guys, submit whatever he needs to be submit to be approved. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, lots of background noise. Dr. Gill, I think you're trying to talk.
Is your mentor licensed in Arizona, Mr. Schaefer?
No, he's not.
Okay. I believe that might be a requirement for you moving forward, but I have another question. You expressed a number of concerns about the board's decision-making here and how it's affected you. Do you feel that the emotions that you're feeling, the conflicts that you're feeling, the concerns and the anger that you have towards this board can act as a barrier toward you functioning in this capacity in the state of Arizona in this new job?
Absolutely.
And I'd like to hear a little more about that.
Yeah, I'd love to say more. When it comes to doing my job, you know, there's nothing more that I want to just forget about this and move on. I understand as the board, you guys need to take things very seriously and you have a job to do and you're trying to be as objective as possible. You know, just because I and many other BCBAs I've spoken to who don't even know me, but I've heard the details of this, disagree with the board, you know, it is what it is.
And that's not relevant here.
While I'm working in Arizona as a BCBA, I will go above and beyond in my performance and to make sure nothing like this ever happens again. And, you know, I didn't need a disciplinary action to have everything to change everything I do. When it comes to documentation, record keeping, notes, I'm way beyond what is even necessary. I've learned a very valuable lesson from this, and I'm extra careful in every single possible way to avoid any other sort of interaction like this.
You could put your concerns aside and move forward on this, on your application to be licensed and to function as a licensed person here in Arizona?
Absolutely, 100%.
I think I have some concerns about that because of your the letters that you've submitted to this board and the fact that, in my impression, you can't let this go.
I'm desperately trying to let it go. Unfortunately, I've lost it's the reason I signed the consent agreement and moved on was because I wanted this to be behind me and I wanted to move on with my life. I wasn't expecting to have to come back to Arizona. I wasn't expecting to lose every job I had because of this disciplinary action on my record. So as I'm coming back to Arizona to live at home with my parents and save money, I'm working extremely hard to get out of debt and to be able to survive on my own. And the Arizona board has nothing to do with my thoughts or thinking. And honestly, like I said, the mandatory mentorship I've been participating in has been enjoyable and helpful. If the Arizona board lets me practice and just be a BCBA, they will never hear about me again. And I will represent the state in a way they feel is appropriate.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, Ms. Schaefer.
Mr. Schaefer, how often did you meet with your mentor in Colorado?
The mentorship started in September, so we've met twice.
How many times did you meet?
Two times for an hour as prescribed, actually over an hour, but as prescribed by the BICB, we're required to have two monthly meetings that last for at least an hour in duration. And we surpassed the hour duration both times.
All right. And I think from my point of view is, you know, we need behavioral analysts in the state. It's very important. There's a lot of great need for that. And I think at this point, what I would like to focus on is, you know, what do we feel is important for him to accomplish in order to be a behavior analyst in Arizona? I think that's what the consent decree said. If he came back, we just need to find out what do we feel comfortable with and let him learn from that. As you mentioned, you've learned from it and then move forward from it.
So this is Dr. Malott. I think I'd like to go back to page 42. And based on the motion that was made back when we met on this case, we had very specific requirements. The practice monitor twice a month for an hour. I'm going to read that. The licensee shall meet with the practice monitor twice a month for 1 hour each session. And the practice monitor shall submit quarterly reports to the board. After 1 year, the board will review the case to determine whether further monitoring is required. And then 3 hours of CEs in the following subject areas: assessment and treatment, preference assessment, clinical documentation, treatment plan, ethics, and professionalism. I note Mr. Schaefer has submitted some CEs, and I would be willing to accept those CEs. They appear to be, approved by the BCBA. So, on what page is the CEs? I saw it on an email. Here it is. I start seeing it. So he's had 4 hours of ethics. He's had visual analysis of data, decision making, he's had how to write a well-written behavior plan. I cannot tell how many hours that is. So he's had about maybe 6 hours of CEs. He still needs about 9 hours of CEs. So at this point, it seems like he needs 9 hours. He needs to find a practice monitor in Arizona, as per our motion back then, while his current supervisor might be a great supervisor, I would really defer to Mr. Davey and whether, you know, there is one that he could, that we could locate one in Arizona and that would provide him with the supervision.
Yeah, I think I have just, I think that sounds good. I think I would probably need some legal advice on that. But I think before we go into that, I just want to get one other thing out.
Okay.
Schaefer, and that is around the mentorship, right? You made two very distinct statements in your emotional letter to us. You state, which is only a couple of weeks, it was like a week old, that your mentor is useless. And then today, verbally, you've told us that you're enjoying your time, that you are working with the mentor. So which one is it? And how are you going to put my concern to rest that this is actually going to help you learn the things that we identify that you need to learn?
Like I said, when I sent that letter, my emotions got the better of me. And I was talking about, and you know, I was wrong. I am willing to admit when I'm wrong. And I said, you know, and I just want the board to recognize that this mentorship isn't free. It's costing me thousands of dollars, as no one's time is free. Paying over $100 an hour for this mentor. And, you know, once it started, it was actually useful and enjoyable. And my mentor, I really like my mentor. I think we're a great fit. He's a business owner. He's been a BCBA for, I think, over a decade. And I would ask that the Arizona board, you know, vets him and takes into consideration allowing me to continue to use him as my mentor, as we already have our contract signed and it's all set up. And I don't see how it would make a difference if someone's in Colorado or Arizona.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. We will take that into consideration. And I appreciate those comments. I think if anybody else has any questions, I'm going to ask that we get some legal advice again, would make a motion that we go into executive session for the purpose of legal advice.
I'll second it. Was that a motion?
Yes, that was a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, there she is. Okay, she's back. All right, we have everybody. Thank you. All right. I think one more question that we can kind of go on to now that you're looking to come back to Arizona. You mentioned that the current position you're looking at here in Arizona, Mr. Schaefer, you would be the only BCBA. Who would you be reporting to for clinical direction? Is there a psychologist, a psychiatrist? Who would
be? I may have been wrong about being the only BCBA. I think what they said was I would be, you know, the BCBA, like kind of like a clinical director role, but there is someone I would be reporting to who's, I believe, a BCBA. I can't remember her name or credentials right now, but I am definitely reporting to a seasoned and experienced individual in the field. And I can get you that information.
So a clinician of some sort.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So let's kind of get to where we're at, right? You signed the consent order with us. Essentially, you're following that order by informing us that you wish to come back to Arizona. Within that agreement, it says, you know, we'll welcome you back, but that's going to fall within parameters that the board will lay out. The board previously had laid out some parameters prior to informing us that you were going to be departing the state. And I believe Dr. Malott hinted at some of those, right? We want to see that mentor. We want to see that mentor two times a month for a year. We want quarterly reports from that. And then, you know, as part of this kind of probationary period with that, we also want the CEUs completed. Some of the discussion is centered around your Colorado mentor that you just started with. And I'm glad you've identified this individual that is you've met now with twice. Arizona statute is very clear. You're going to be in Arizona practicing, then this individual that's going to be providing mentorship supervision needs to be licensed in the state of Arizona. So the board is going to, that is going to be the kind of the guidelines for you. The individual, you're going to have to find someone here, and board staff can help you to the extent they can with the list we have of individuals that AZABA is working with to be able to help with those, identifying those individuals. Or conversely, you know, your Colorado person could conceivably become licensed in the state of Arizona. But it's going to have to be an Arizona licensed behavior analyst. It cannot be someone who only holds a national certification or a different state license.
Mr. Davey, just a quick question, clarifying question. Could it, if his supervisor at this new job that he may acquire is a license, could he submit that name if that person is willing to supervise?
I believe, Jean, the stipulation about being, it's a relationship. Is it, can it be someone that's attached to them with employment?
I don't know if historically that has happened with the behavior analysts. And typically in with the psychologists, that does not. The stipulation is that you have no business or familial relationship with your supervisor to try to keep it objective. If he were to have his current supervisor, if he or she is otherwise qualified, it may be appropriate in order to facilitate access to current caseload and their files.
And if the supervisor is not the owner of the agency?
Correct.
The supervisor could just be another employee of that same agency.
It sounds like that's correct.
Okay.
Okay. So that's kind of where we're at, Mr. Schaefer. You've informed us. We are going to continue with the terms of probation that we had laid out back, I believe, in last October, whenever we adjudicated the matter. And that's subject to that monitoring and supervision and a quarterly report submitted to us. The effective date of this starting would be, we'll have to amend the current document that's that exists in terms of the consent, and that this will, there will be an amendment stating that these are the terms of the return to Arizona.
And as soon as he identifies his supervisor, that would start the probation period. In the meantime, we could consider the CEs he's completed, mm-hmm. and he will need to complete the rest of the CEs.
Can I say something about the CEUs? The BACB prescribed the same.
Yeah. This is it. We would accept what you've completed.
Well, I completed. I met that. I fulfilled that requirement. I did 16.
Okay. Okay. So if you submit us the paperwork, we can review that. So
I thought I did. And it's okay if you didn't glance at all of it, but I sent Ms. Michelson all the certificates and. Okay. I can also forward you the email from the BACB saying that part of the disciplinary action has been met and fulfilled.
And that's fine. We will consider that, Mr. Schaefer. We'll just say, those are the things we need, and we can consider that in a subsequent, when all of the terms are completed and let you know. So,
and Mr. Schaefer, the question really is there was one or two that just didn't have credit hours on it, so we couldn't add it up. It wasn't that they weren't reviewed, but I believe the... Okay. The ones I have tagged are the well-crafted behavior plan doesn't have a credit number on it. And so that's the reason we don't know the exact number as we sit here today. You can provide that to board staff, and of course we'll accept that. Please note that these requirements, though, are in addition to the CEUs you need to put forth for continued licensure. So these, once they're submitted, essentially go away, and you will be restarting in terms of what you need to complete for renewing your license in the future.
Yeah, that's the same thing with the BACB. These CEUs do not count towards the 32 I would otherwise need. So okay. A lot of money on CEUs.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Davey, I think we also, Dr. Malott brought this up, is there'd be a clause in there that after 6 months, based on the reports from the mentor, there'd be an option to ask to be relieved from the consent agreement if you are showing the progress and the professionalism that is expected of your, of your profession.
So with that, I think we'll move into deliberation so we can move on from this. So
can I ask one more question?
Yes.
Is there any way at all to remove the consent agreement from the internet? Because if you Google Brian Schaefer BCBA, it comes up, and that's been problematic.
We cannot. It's a public document. We don't control what appears on the internet.
Okay.
The board is required by statute to post all disciplinary actions on the website for 5 years, so we cannot remove it at this time.
Is there any sort of situation in which this can not be disciplinary action?
No.
At this point?
No. All right, so let's go ahead and move into deliberation. Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. I think, Dr. Malott, do you want to
I'd like to go ahead and make the motion that since Mr. Schaefer has informed us that he's returning to practice in Arizona, that we, we put into effect the terms of probation, which includes finding an Arizona licensed behavior analyst to serve as the practice monitor. He meets twice a month for an hour each. He can go ahead and identify, and the board staff will review, maybe with input from you, Mr. Davey, Dr. Davey, on the appropriateness of the mentor, and that we will review all of the CEs he's completed thus far to meet these terms of the probation, because it was similar to the BCBA. And if we feel it's an order, we can accept it. If there are a couple that he needs, we will, but basically these additional CEs and the consent agreement will need to be updated to include all of this information.
And Dr. Malott, your motion for the practice monitor who would need to be pre-approved. I have two questions. Yes. The first one is, would the practice monitor be required to review client files? Typically in the consent agreement, they will review a minimum of 5 files per quarter.
I think that would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the second question, is there areas of focus for this monitor?
I would leave that to Mr. Davey, who's the expert.
Again, I would use the same areas that we put through the CEs to be consistent: assessment of treatment, preference assessments, clinical documentation, ongoing treatment plans, ethics and professionalism.
And Ms. Dr. Malott, did you mention the 6-month clause?
Yes. Does that need to be in the consent agreement, Ms. Galvin, or is that?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, if it doesn't, I would ask you to state the original length of probation as well.
The original length of probation was listed as 1 year. However, Mr. Schaefer can return to the board, provided we've received timely reports from his supervisor, at least 2 quarterly reports. He can request the board to consider ending the terms of probation earlier than stated in the consent agreement.
And Dr. Morales, after those 6 months, he can petition to be released from probation and monitoring. Would that also be contingent upon the practice monitor's recommendation?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
I'll second the motion.
All right. Thank you very much. Discussion?
Can I ask a question?
Not at this time, sir. Board, any discussion around this? Okay, hearing none. Do we need a roll call for this?
Yes, you do.
Board staff, will you help us with a board call?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
Yes, and I would like to make a statement. Mr. Schaefer, I understand your frustration with this process, but I hope that you will take this amended consent agreement to heart and come back to us in 6 months, and maybe we can lift all of the restrictions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Gill?
Yes.
Ms. LaBoy?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes, and I'll also make a comment. I echoed what Dr. Mr. Dinar said. We want you to be successful. We're hopeful in your career. And hopefully this is, like you mentioned, this has been a learning opportunity. And then as we go forward, that there won't be any issues. So my vote is yes.
Thank you. Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
With Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson recused.
Thank you.
And board members and members of the public, I'd like to go ahead and give out the first CE code word for anybody that's attending for CE. The first CE code word is jack-o'-lantern, jack-o'-lantern. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Mr. Schaefer, board staff will be in contact with you via email with regard to the amended agreements. Once you sign that, that will start the effective date of these terms and your return to Arizona. They'll be happy to answer any questions for you and support you in any way you can. Echoing what my colleagues said, and even the ones that didn't say that, you know, this is a chance for you to kind of look through the areas that were concerned. Sounds like you're already on it with the CEs. Take the time to talk about this with your existing mentor or your Arizona mentor, and really, you know, learn from this and continue to carry this forward for many years to come, hopefully here in the state of Arizona as a licensed BCBA or a licensed behavior analyst. Thank you. And we can now return to the agenda. So I believe we can go ahead and maybe have a comfort break since it's an hour and a half and then get Dr. Davis Wilson back in here. Does that sound acceptable, Ms. Michelson and Ms. Backenden?
Yes, we do have the chair back right now, so I'll defer to her.
I would
like to take a break or keep going.
I'm hearing a comfort break would be wanted, so let's go ahead and break until 11:45, so 7 minutes.
Thank you.
Trying to make sure everybody is back. All right. And Mr. Diner, just to confirm you are, oh, I see. No, perfect. Excellent. If we could real quick, I'd like to suggest that we take a look at agenda item number 9. Agenda item number 9 is discussion consideration and possible action relating to the board's denial notice issued to Rachel Schwartz, an applicant for psychologist licensure, possible alternative motion to include issuance of amended denial notice. Ms. Michelson, will you please provide us a summary of this matter?
Yes, Madam Chair. The board may recall that at its meeting on July 9th, they reviewed Dr. Schwartz's psychologist application for licensure and her self-report regarding criminal charges for shoplifting and criminal damage that occurred in May of 2021, but had not been yet adjudicated in court. At that time, the board voted to deny Dr. Schwartz's application, and a notice of denial was subsequently sent to her and her attorney, Mr. Carey, on August 10th. Mr. Carey did reach out after receiving that notice to board staff requesting a few revisions to the denial notice as it pertained primarily to the content surrounding the criminal charges. For reference, the requested revisions by Mr. Carey are contained on page 7 of this file with comments. Board staff and Ms. Galvin arranged to meet with Mr. Carey to discuss his request and notified him that an amended notice could be presented to the board for consideration, as board staff did not have the authority to make revisions to the content of the letter. We subsequently sent a proposed amended notice to Mr. Carey and Dr. Schwartz for their review, noting that the requested revisions were supported by board staff, with the exception of one sentence was stated, in this case, you have not successfully passed ECCC and have not provided the board adequate information concerning your rehabilitation efforts. Staff revised the sentence to state, in this case, you have not successfully passed ECCC and you have not provided the board adequate evidence that the conduct has been corrected or resolved. It was noted that this language in the letter regarding the conduct not having been resolved or corrected was taken directly from statute and would need to be included in the letter as it was the board's basis for denial. Mr. Carey did indicate that the amended notice proposed by board staff would be acceptable. And I do want to note that while the original notice would remain in the file, the amended notice that is before you for approval, which is on page 14 of this file, if approved here today, would supersede the original notice that was sent out. So please let me know if there are any questions. I do believe that Mr. Carey is here, and I did see Dr. Schwartz earlier.
Thank you. Dr. Schwartz, Mr. Carey, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourselves for the record, and if you do have a brief statement, you can do so now.
Yes, Chair, members of the board, this is Flynn Carey, counsel for Dr. Schwartz.
Dr. Schwartz.
She was on earlier. I'm not sure if she dropped off.
Madam Chair, I don't see her present.
I believe I can proceed if the chair would allow me.
Yes, I would be okay with that.
All right. This is essentially an attempt to avoid moving the matter to a hearing. We asked for some modifications, and it was a collaborative process with counsel and the board to reach language that Dr. Schwartz was comfortable with. I think it still honors the statements made by board members during the meeting. It's something, though, that also takes into account the still pending nature of the complaint, of the criminal complaint, and also the steps she has taken from a rehabilitative perspective. And so, you know, our goal is not to go and have a hearing on this or embroil the board in litigation. It was really more to work to revise the language, recognizing that before Dr. Schwartz, if and before Dr. Schwartz returns to the board, there's going to be some expectations of conduct and a demonstration of rehabilitation. And I think the letter does capture that. So we would ask that the board accept this amendment and allow that to supersede the previous previous letter that was provided by board staff.
Thank you. Board members, are there any questions for Mr. Carey?
Madam Chairman, this is Jean Galvin. If the board does accept this amended notice of denial, then Mr. Carey has filed a request for hearing and notice of appeal just to preserve his client's right. And I believe, Mr. Carey, there would be an understanding that that request for hearing would be withdrawn.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Galvin. Just to clarify for the board, because the statutory requirement is that we do ask for a hearing, we couldn't have that. The timing just didn't work such that this meeting preceded the hearing date. So I had to file a notice of hearing. The idea would be once this was approved, I would then file with the board a motion to withdraw the request for hearing. And that's essentially the agreement that we had reached with the board staff.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes, Ms. Shreve.
Ms. Galvin, and I don't know if you can answer this in open meeting or not, do you have any concerns with the amended?
I do not. I worked with Mr. Carey and your staff to put forth what you see in your file, and I can support that. I believe that it does those things that Mr. Carey represented. It accurately reflects the state of the criminal proceeding and also reflects the board's concern.
All right, with that, then I'd make a motion that we accept it. We accept the amended motion. We accept the amended.
Amended notice of denial.
All right, thank you. That.
Dinah, a second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please.
We will, because it constitutes a denial, I would request a roll call.
Perfect. Ms. Poe, can you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Gill?
Yes.
Ms. LaBoy? Ms. LaBoy? Dr. Malat?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Last call, Ms. LaBoy? Motion is unanimous. Motion carries.
With one abstention from Ms. LaBoy. So this amended notice of denial will be finalized, signed, and sent to Dr. Schwartz and Mr. Carey. And then I assume, Flynn, within a few days of that, you would withdraw your request for hearing.
That is correct.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Chair, members of the board.
Thank you. All right, we will now move to agenda item number 8. We'll start with 8A, complaint T2103 concerning Dr. Joshua Smith. Dr. Catarino, you are the lead for this case. Will you please provide a brief summary to the board?
It's not exactly that brief, but I'll do my best. I just want to give you first a little bit about Dr. Smith's background. He, in 2014, was certified as a school psychologist with the Department of Education of Arizona. In 2018, he received a PsyD degree from Argosy from the school psychology program. In 2018, he applied for exam and licensure with the board. He did attempt the ECPP twice. So far has not met the passport requirement and is not currently licensed. On 2018 and in the 2019 B application, he said that he has been working as a postdoctoral resident at the Arizona Neuropsychology Centers, or referred to as AZ Neuropsych, under the supervision of Dr. John Mather. There was a concern here that the Arizona Corporation Commission indicated that AZ Neuropsych was not incorporated until 2019, but on his application, Dr. Smith said he'd been working there since 2018. So in there, we met in April 8th, 2021, and we decided to open an investigation regarding a possible title violation for practicing without a license at a company he owns called Horizon. This would be possible violation of ARS 32-2084. So there were a couple concerns. One, lack of qualification to provide supervision for postdoctoral supervised experience at Horizon. The case came to us originally because I don't know if I'm allowed to say the applicant's name, but we'll refer to him as Dr. C. Stated that he submitted a training agreement with listing Dr. Smith as his supervisor. And on the training agreement, it says, according to Dr. Smith, I am qualified as a supervisor. I have no disciplinary complaints and I'm qualified in the area which I'm supervising. This was apparently then pulled back by Dr. C, saying that this was an error, that the supervision agreement was for school psychology certification, for which at the last meeting, Dr. C had not applied. But the training agreement referred only to APA ethics, the rules and statutes of the Board of Psychologists, and there was just one reference to the Department of Education, no reference to the ethics of NASP or any school psych organization. In addition, no postdoctoral experience is required in Arizona to earn a school psychology certificate from the Arizona Department of Education. So the first concern, again, is the lack of qualification to provide supervision for postdoctoral supervised experience. Second, and the other concern we had was title violation. And we saw that Dr. Smith had incorporated a company called Arizona Psychological Services, Horizon Psychological Services, LLC, and listed himself as managing director and founder of Horizon in 2016. So when we met with Dr. Smith, he said that he has added the words educational to the title of the company, but he had not yet taken the term psychological services off. And I think he may be in the process of looking into that or doing something about that since we met. So we looked at the Horizon Educational and Psychological Services website. It's as it was up before, it is no longer up. And there is, an exemption for school psychologists in the law that said a school psychologist employed in a common school, high school, or charter school setting and certified but is entitled to use that term a school psychologist as part of their duties in the common school, high school, or charter school employment. So we looked into this. Horizon is not a private or public school, and on the website, no associated schools were listed. On the website, it says that Dr. Smith specializes in, quote, evaluating and treating children, adolescents, and young adults with neuropsychological disorders in the school setting. But again, no schools were listed. There's a listing of what services Horizon could provide, and they were psychological, psychoeducational, and neuropsychological evaluations. So these are using the term psychological and neuropsychological, which I believe are title protective terms. It says the psychological evaluations are generally performed by a clinical or licensed psychologist. Nowhere does it say school psychologist, who work in schools, hospitals, or in private practices, and that neuropsychologist evaluations are performed by psychologists who specialize in neuropsychologists. So the board asked for a list of the employees of Horizon, and there were no licensed psychologists listed on the staff section of the website, and the lawyer for Dr. Smith did not send in three names, a psychometrist, office manager, secretary, and Dr. Smith, and none of these were licensed psychologists. Also looking at the website, there was a listing that there were extended business hours. I don't know why this would be necessary if he were only practicing in a school, because kids would not be there at later times of the day. In general, I wondered why they even needed to have a website called Horizon, which would advertise to the general public if they were only working with schools. So in looking again at the Horizon website, it mentions what the services are, evaluating and treating children. And then it also mentions that they provide school neuropsychological evaluations, psychoeducation evaluations, and gifted assessments. And gifted assessments would require that it be coordinated by a licensed psychologist. Okay, at this point, we also looked at the Arizona Neuropsychological Services, and the letterhead lists both Dr. Mather and Dr. Smith's name. There was a biography for Dr. Smith, but it did not exactly say what his services were. But nowhere did it say that Dr. Smith was a postdoctoral resident. Okay. Next, on May 25th, Dr. Smith submitted a response to his attorney, Ms. Sarah Stark. There were some responses, but no documentation. So he did agree that he owns Horizon. He said that he provides evaluations for ESA and IEEs on site at the school campuses. He said he only performs these independently in school settings, which then he thought would qualify as a license exemption under ARS 322085. In the event that we asked what he would do if someone from the public called and asked for an evaluation, and he said he would refer the matter to the Arizona Neuropsych and that he may help Dr. Mather in providing the services. We did ask the relationship, and we know now that Arizona Neuropsych and Horizon did share the same address. So now, recently, on August 9th, the board looked up the Horizon website, and it says under construction, or Dr. Smith is in the process of updating his business, please visit him at azneurocenters.com. There was no response as to why Horizon listed performing psychological evaluations, and that the original website did not discuss AZ Neuropsych. Ward asked Dr. Smith to submit copies of his contracts that he has with the schools. One was a contract between Legacy Traditional Schools and Dr. Smith on Horizon Letterhead. And the second was a contract with Dr. Smith in Educational Support Services, which is not exactly a school and does have a business address, which is the same as Arizona Neuropsychological Services. The board asked Dr. Smith's attorney for a complete client list of individuals he saw at Horizon between March 20 and March 21 and the type of services provided. Ms. Stark sent in a list of 63 client names, all of whom were listed as receiving a psychoeducational evaluation. They then board subpoenaed for a few clients, a random list of three clients. And these two of the three were at the Legacy Traditional School where Dr. Smith had a contract, but one was for a student at American Leadership Academy, which he did not supply a contract for. The other thing, we also got reports from Arizona Neuropsychological, and one of those, gifted evaluation, was only signed by Dr. Smith and not by Dr. Mather. It also, nowhere did it say postdoctoral resident under Dr. Smith's name. It was not clearly stated who was completing the evaluation in the informed consent to the parents. So it appeared that parents would perceive the website and the services provided by Horizon as Dr. Smith performing the duties of a psychologist. I actually I'm on a listserv and I saw people mentioning that they went to Dr. Smith and that he was doing a great evaluation, a neuropsych evaluation for their child. So I think parents did perceive him as functioning as a psychologist, at least as one parent. Okay, and then, finally, our concerns is number one, the name of the corporation, which is Arizona Horizon Psychological Services. Number two, the listing for Horizon and other social media platforms indicating that they provide psychological and neuropsychological evaluations without having a licensed psychologist on staff, and that Dr. Smith, being the only one listed who has psychological training, the public might perceive him as being a psychologist and performing psychological functions. Number three, that Dr. Smith appeared to be serving as a supervisor for Dr. C, who was seeking a license when a supervision would not qualify towards licensure. And number four, that the postdoctoral residency contained evaluation reports, at least one, signed by Dr. Smith and not Dr. Mather, and did not clearly explain who were providing the services. So at this point, I'm concerned that he is in violation of ARS 2084 and a title violation. And that's it.
Thank you. Dr. Smith is present with his attorney, Ms. Stark. Ms. Stark, if you and Dr. Smith could please unmute yourselves and introduce yourself, and now would be a good time to make a statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Sarah Stark, and I'm counsel for Josh Smith.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. I'm Dr. Smith.
Thank you. Ms. Stark, did you want to make a statement or Dr. Smith, would you like to?
Yes, I'll make a brief statement. As I said, my name is Sarah Stark and I am counsel for Josh Smith. Horizon is the LLC through which Dr. Smith contracts with schools to provide services as a school psychologist within a school setting. And Dr. Smith is the sole member and manager of this LLC. And just to address one point that was raised by Dr. Catarino, the contract that Dr. Smith has with American Leadership Academy is through ESS, which is a third-party contractor who secures services for this school. So if you look at Section 3A of the contract, it specifically states that, the work will be on site and provide services to American Leadership Academy. As Dr. Catarino said, as a certified school psychologist, Dr. Smith is exempt from licensure pursuant to ARS 32-2075-A1, as he is employed in a school setting and is a nationally certified school psychologist through the National Association of School Psychologists and is also certified to use the title by the Arizona Department of Education. In addition, as we've stated, the services are provided pursuant to Dr. Smith's employment contracts with individual schools and with school districts for educational purposes. Independent of his school services provided through Horizon, Dr. Smith also worked with Dr. Mather at Arizona Neuropsychology Centers, where Dr. Mather supervised his work. Dr. Mather and Dr. Smith had an ongoing supervision agreement wherein Dr. Smith agreed to always work under Dr. Mather's supervision when completing any clinical or neuropsychological evaluations. While conducting evaluations for ANC, Dr. Smith was always supervised by Dr. Mather pursuant to the terms of this agreement. With regard to the concerns raised about Dr. Smith's marketing materials, including his website and Facebook page, Dr. Smith has acknowledged the board's concerns and has taken down both his website and his Facebook page in order to address these issues. Dr. Smith is taking the issues raised in the board's investigation very seriously and has reassessed aspects of his business practice to ensure he is not violating any of the board's rules or statutes. In response to the board members' concerns raised at the CSC meeting, Dr. Smith has applied to change the name of his LLC and has removed psychological from the title so that the title is now Horizon Educational Services, pending approval by the Arizona Corporation Commission. And these documents were provided to Ms. Michelson after the CSC meeting. In addition, Dr. Smith has completed 12 hours of continuing education and the certificates of completion have been sent to board staff. Dr. Smith is fully committed to cooperating with the board in order to address any further concerns regarding his current practice as a school psychologist as he works toward obtaining his full license with the board. In furtherance of his goals for future licensure with the board, Dr. Smith has opted to take a sabbatical from ANC in order to focus on studying for his licensing exams. Dr. Smith believes that he is currently compliant with the board's rules and statutes, but is willing to take any additional steps requested or required by the board at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Smith or his legal counsel?
I do.
Yes, Dr. Katerina.
Okay, Dr. Smith, since the Horizon Psychological Services opened, have you performed any psychological or neuropsychological evaluations at your offices, not at a school?
No, everything's contracted and done at the school for educational purposes. It's at the school setting. I have gone to, some people that are on virtual with the schools, have gone to clients' houses to perform some of the evaluation. So it's not 100% in the school setting, but no, it hasn't been under Horizon as far as in my office. Everything else was done under Arizona Neuropsychology Centers.
Why did Horizon need a website to advertise to the public?
So when I opened up my website, it's evolved since its inception, but it was really advocating and educating families and parents of the whole process of the school evaluations, the difference between psychological and neuropsychological evaluations, because I think that's important for families to understand that process. My background being an education and special education teacher and being in meetings and doing these evaluations, a lot of parents came to me just not understanding those. So that was my intention when I opened this website and Horizon more for that educational piece to families.
Well, you listed, psychological and neuropsychological and psychoeducational and gifted services on your website. Why did the public need to be aware of that if you were working primarily in contract with a school?
So that I felt was more like an educational piece for them so they know what types of evaluations that were out there.
But it said under your services that those are performed.
And my intention was, eventually to become licensed and have those services provided to families. It wasn't my intention at all to deceive or harm the public. And and misinform them. So that's why at this point I've taken down my website and trying to clean it up so I can move forward. And
so the did you provide any psychological, neuropsychological, or gifted assessments to at Horizon to individuals that were not in the two places where you had a contract, the Legacy and the Leadership Academies?
No, everything's been under contract with the school.
So, like, for example, if I were to find this mother who endorsed you, she would say that her child was going to one of those schools and it had been performed at the school, your evaluation.
Well, I've also worked under Dr. Mather and did evaluations under him too. So I don't know what.
But she listed Horizon only on her comment.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the family that you're talking about, but.
Well, I don't want to mention their name. But
correct. No. So the intention, if they came through me through Horizon, you know, through whatever, the website or advertising, you know, I would do a consultation, see what their needs were, and then refer them out. It wasn't just Arizona Neuropsychology Centers. I sent them over a handful of psychologists or advocates or, you know, medical professionals that I would, give parents so they can make that informed decision. Well,
she said that you did the evaluation, it said, and you were very good and caring person. That's what she read.
Oh, well, so. Good.
Okay. Well, I'll let someone else.
But I don't know. I said, you know, the family, I don't, but everything that was done contracted was through the schools. You know, it could have been a family that said, oh, Horizon, I got your information, came to me, and then I moved them over. They could have gotten an evaluation under Arizona Neuropsychology Centers. So.
I think it was in 2017, prior to you going to Arizona Neuropsychological Center. Okay. Anybody else have a question?
Dr. Gill.
Yes, Dr. Smith, thank you for being here. I think you referred to this, but I want some clarity. There was some confusion and ambiguity about where Horizon started and ended and where Arizona Neuropsych began. So have you separated yourself and made your entity separate from, even physically separate from, Arizona Neuropsych?
Yeah, so Arizona Neuropsychology Centers is Dr. Mather's business LLC. So, you know, at one point, yes, right now I'm on a sabbatical. I'm not working in the office. But I still do have my office is there. My address is there. But my intention is to, you know, separate and move forward once, you know, this process is done.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I wanted to ask.
Any additional questions?
I'm curious why we needed extended hours. Why Horizon was open for extended hours if you only worked in the school?
So I also, you know, that goes back to the consultation piece with families that I met with, and, you know, parents that work during the week and during the day don't have time, you know, come see me. So I would schedule stuff out outside of those hours.
Okay. Any additional questions? Hearing none. The board will move into
Miss Dr. Wilson. I don't think you can see my hand.
I could not, but go right ahead.
Okay.
I apologize.
No, I just wanna, so when you say sabbatical, you're still working with your school contracts, I'm assuming, Dr. Smith.
Correct.
Okay. And you're providing services for the schools as per the agreements you have, and you're focusing on taking the exam. In terms of, you know, practicing without a license, the board, you know, you've been notified and, you know, we ask individuals who are doing that to cease and desist. Would you say that you have ceased and desisted?
Yes, I have since.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I had one question, and I don't know if it's a question that perhaps Dr. Catarino or maybe Dr. Malott, maybe you guys can help me with a little bit. As far as like the entry points, and you guys may have discussed this in the CSE, if a family calls because they have a disagreement with the school, with any school district's findings, and they call because they want an IEE, is that, yes, the school pays for that, but is that the same as being contracted to provide psychological services for?
We're discussing that in committee right now, Dr. Davis-Wilson, because it is complicated and we have a subcommittee. So maybe I think we should wait for that.
But yes.
Okay.
Can I say more? One of the, in the districts that we talked to, most of them or all of them said that they usually contract for IEEs with licensed psychologists.
Yeah. The majority happened, but it's not 100%. And we definitely had some long discussions, you know.
Yeah. I guess my concern that I would just possibly relay, I don't know if it makes a difference, but perhaps to just give a little bit of perspective to Dr. Smith, I think the concern for me is still the accessibility of parents being able to contact and request the service without there being, because, and I know we've talked about this before, and I know it's being discussed in committee, but to me, the exemption reads that the practice of school psychology is exempt when you're employed by the school. And so I would just, for me, it's clear when the school says, hey, even if it's a 1099 contract, hey, we're going to contract and we're going to do these things or whatever with you. But when it's a family saying, hey, I'm requesting an IEE and then going back to the school and saying, hey, they requested me for the IEE. Do you want to contract with me? I think that's a different, that's a little bit of a different distinction. And I think that I would caution how referrals are coming in to Dr. Smith to make sure that that those arrangements are fully with the school and not arrangements where a family can reach out and say, hey, because right. Even when you direct back to the school, sometimes what like a family will do is go back to the school and say, hey, this individual said they can do it. So we want to use them. And it's still not clear as to whether or not the school is wanting to contract or not. So I would just caution kind of the entry points of parents even being able to access that information outside of the school contract to begin with, but maybe
it is a tricky one. And the committee is definitely discussing that. And those are good points that we can take back, Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yeah, Dr. Smith, this is Wilson. Brings up I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. But I was just going to add to that point that I'm not, at this point, I'm not doing any IEs or ESA or anything else. It's strictly contracted work with the schools in the school setting. So I'm not even, until this is all cleared up and I get licensed, well, I'll go back to doing those things. So
okay.
Yeah. That comes in now that gets, you know, someone calls me, I've just been referring now. So
okay.
I'm just at that capacity. So just like,
yeah, you raised a very good point. And I was thinking, Dr. Smith, did you ever accept money from, directly from a client to pay for these evaluations, a client such as a private family or a parent, or was all the money given to you through a school district as being, you know, an independent educational evaluator?
It's through the school setting, yeah, through PO and purchase order.
So you've never taken private funds or insurance from a family?
Not for evaluations. I've done for like advocacy work or attending meetings, things like that. The parents wanted me to be there as an expert.
And not for an evaluation. But not for ever. Evaluation.
Yeah. And I, Dr. Smith, I do appreciate that clarification because I also am active in the world of special education, and I do know that families do speak highly of your work just in general. And so I want to make sure that you have a process for working with those families, because I think word of mouth is probably a referral source that you get. And as such, that kind of separates outside of the school contract. So that was mostly what I just wanted to bring up, is that word of mouth could kind of be a slippery slope if you're not careful, but you provided clarification to kind of how you're handling that right now.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Dr. Smith?
Well, yes, one more. Prior to becoming affiliated with Arizona Neuropsychological Association, the horizon was open for at least two years, and that was also prior to your degree. Who did the evaluations then? Because you refer the evaluations to Arizona Neuropsychological later, but before AZ and NS was incorporated, who did you refer to do the psychological evaluations?
Just other doctors that specialize in, you know, psychoeducational. Do you want me to name a couple that I normally?
No. As long as they were licensed psychologists?
Correct.
Okay.
Like I said earlier, my website's kind of evolved, and, you know, when I first opened up, it was more of that educational advocacy piece too. So talked about evaluations, but I knew at that point I could not do those, you know, independently. So,
I wondered why you don't have under your name postdoctoral resident on your signature page or anywhere listed on your the website of Arizona Neuropsychological Association. Why does it not call you a postdoctoral resident?
Just because I'm a certified school psychologist, and we just went with that title because I earned that. And so, but in some of the documents, and even, you know, when I presented with parents and Dr. Mather, we sat down with parents, you know, that was discussed, you know, every time a family did come into the office, you know, I was working with the families, but Dr. Mather was accessible, you know, at any time they felt uncomfortable or wanted Dr. Mather to step in. That was an option. They were aware of those things too.
Actually, I think on the evaluations we received, it didn't have any title for you, just your name on the signature page.
Okay.
Any additional?
You have to make a motion at this point. What is on?
Yeah, motion? I'm fine with.
Okay. Yeah, can we go to the motion?
Yeah.
Yep. Go right ahead, Dr. Millett.
Since Dr. Smith has addressed all of our concerns and he has cease and desist, really, because he is not a member of the, you know, he's not a licensed psychologist, is our motion to dismiss this at this point? I'd like to make a motion to dismiss.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
I am.
We have the motion does carry. All right. Thank you, Dr. Smith.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
We will now move to agenda item 8B. This is going to be complaint T2201 concerning Dr. Scott Padilla. Dr. Gill, you are the lead for this case. Will you please provide a brief summary to the board?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Scott Padilla Arizona license was issued in 2017, and his license was surrendered as part of a consent agreement in November of 2020. In April of 2020, while licensed in active status in the state, Dr. P began treatment with an adult female TB in Tucson. Under the rubric of Bamboo Wellness, PLLC. On November the 6th, 2020, Dr. P signed a consent agreement with the board, voluntarily surrendering his license due to multiple complaints and inappropriate conduct with patients. On July the 9th of 2021, the board received an email from one of Dr. P's former patients, NC, indicating Dr. P was still practicing. NC said that she posted on a Reddit website such a situation that included a public warning that he was still in practice. Dr. P was reportedly still seeing clients at home or at a coffee shop under the guise of being a therapist. And TB reported to the board that she saw Dr. P for services until 1 week before July the 5th, 2021. And asked about that time, TB emailed Dr. P requesting an appointment. Dr. P replied that he moved out of his office. However, TB could see him at his home or at a coffee shop. TB felt unsure, researched online, found that Dr. P had surrendered his license. Dr. P sent an email on December the 1st, 2020 to TB saying he was not renewing his license, but failed to say he had surrendered it. Dr. P, in an email of December the 1st, said to TB that she could meet him in a counseling coaching capacity, noting that it wouldn't feel any different to the client, but that he is required to inform her of the change. Now, board staff, after consulting with the board's assistant attorney general, opened a complaint in possible violation of ARS 32-2084. Now, the complaint notification letter to Dr. Patia addressed the date 11-6-2020, in which he was reminded that he entered into a consent agreement when he surrendered his license. And as the above date, he was no longer permitted to practice or holding himself out as a licensed psychologist. In July of 2021, board staff received email indicating Dr. P is continuing to provide services. In the email, he falsely told clients that he was not renewing his license, but failed to say that the license was surrendered. He said that TB would meet with him in a counseling coaching capacity. Dr. P reported that he was moving out of his office July of 2021 and offered sessions to the client at his home or at a coffee shop. And Dr. P informed that he may be informed that he was in violation of the law and was asked to submit a written response and submit a copy of the client's file to the board to review and to include any written correspondence with the patient with his client. Now, response from Dr. Padilla. Dr. P, not represented by an attorney. The response letter listed his name at the top and Bamboo Wellness Coaching Services underneath. Dr. P stated that he has denied practicing psychology or providing services without a license since his surrender of the license. Client TB, in November of 2020, emailed Dr. P requesting an appointment, but reportedly his last contact with his client was October the 21st of 2020. Dr. P at that time had been pursuing a teaching position at University of Arizona and not intending to continue his practice. Dr. P at that time had informed each of his clients regarding a change in his licensure status. A small number of clients expressed interest in continuing in a coaching capacity. Dr. P responded to client's TB email, would be willing to see client, but had begun to pursue a teaching position, would not be renewing his license. At that time with TB, he set up appointment for December the 8th, but denied that appointment took place. Dr. P said he was advised by colleagues not to say he was surrendering his license. Dr. P stated in his email response to TB that he could no longer call himself a psychologist because he was not licensed. Dr. P submitted a document to a small number of clients who chose to continue with him. He included in his response a document in which he was no longer licensed, but they could continue to see him. The document was not signed by any client, however. Dr. P, after a short review, acknowledged that up until April of 2021, the digital signature of his session notes read, quote, psychologist owner, unquote. In April, he changed the digital signature to, quote, therapist owner. Session notes from December of 2020 to 2021 no longer would include a diagnosis. According to board staff, as of September the 7th, there were no copies of correspondence between Dr. P and TB submitted to the board. Dr. P said he removed profiles from Psychology Today and Good Therapy websites. Dr. P created a new business card. No use of the root word psych was found. Dr. P continued to use the terms counseling, coaching, therapist. Last office visit was June the 23rd, 2021. Told clients he would be setting up a home office. And nevertheless, his final comment was, he informed the board no need for a cease and desist letter. He decided he would no longer provide, quote, counseling, quote, coaching, quote, therapy, or any similar service. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. We do have the complainant TB present. TB, if you would like to make a statement, please only use your initials, but you may make a statement now.
I just kind of just say what I said in the last meeting. The whole goal in this is to make sure everyone understands, and like anyone that was maybe previously seeing him or seeing him during the same period that I was, maybe would become aware, because I always thoroughly research psychologists before I see them. And early on, I did do the research, but then in November, everything happened, but I didn't do that research at that point. I researched once I got that last email after trying to make the last appointment. And then the Arizona board, like all of the last meetings and stuff came up, and all of those orders and the surrender of the license all came up. So I felt that it was just needed that there would be some sort of warning or some sort of something said about it. And when I was the last time at the office, there was another person that had met with him before me. So I just feel the need to, that I'm the one that found it out, that to make sure that everyone is aware. But that's all I have to say.
Thank you. We appreciate you joining us today. Does anybody have any questions for TB? Dr. Gill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one question. Thank you for being here, TB. And when was the last time you saw Dr. Padilla?
It was November, or not November, sorry. June. Let me look at my email real quick. So it looks like it should have been June 21st.
Of this year, 2021?
Of 2021.
Okay. And all right, that's all. Yeah, according to what we were hearing, that the last face-to-face contact was November of 2020. So, okay, thank you very much.
And Dr. Gill, just to clarify your question and looking at the notes that were provided by Dr. Padilla at my request on page 38, that was the last progress note and the date of service is listed as June 23rd. I believe that may have been, I don't know if that was in person or virtual.
Okay, thank you, Deborah.
Any other questions for TB? My only question for you, TB, is when you began services with Dr. Padilla, you were seeking psychological services, correct?
Yeah.
Thank you. And then when you received correspondence from Dr. Padilla that you would just be changing the formality of, if you will, the meetings, were you just personally under the impression that you were still going to be receiving psychological services?
I think it's hard to find psychologists. It's hard to find good, you know, therapists, and I've gone through a lot. So when I saw that, I wasn't concerned because, you know, the way it was stated. So I was like, I would rather continue until, you know, until I come up with a conclusion or find somebody else. So I did schedule the appointment after that, but then there was never any other discussion or paperwork signed after the initial intake date, when I first started seeing. So I didn't question it. And I guess, I wasn't sure when the, you know, psychologist license even expires or how that works in the first place. So I guess I just wasn't concerned at that point.
No, I understand. Thank you. Yeah. Caterino. You're muted, Dr. Caterino.
TB, did you initially work through your insurance, or was it always fee for service?
So it was insurance up to, I think, October. But I also had like a health savings card. So I used the health savings card, but before that point, we were trying to get insurance situated. I do have Cigna, so I figured usually there's good coverage, but I know therapists a lot of the time struggle with dealing with insurance companies too. So that also wasn't something that I was overly concerned with, having the health savings.
Okay, so because I thought then you would know, you know, that the insurance wouldn't be provided to a non-licensed person, but you were using the health savings, so it wouldn't have come to your attention. Is that right?
Yeah, and I submitted the email where he talked about, he mentioned not dealing with insurance anymore and not continuing that contract with insurance. Yes. So that lined up before the time he mentioned the psychologist license end or whatever. So it was like 2 months apart, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any additional questions? Great. Ms. Shree.
Yes. And we do appreciate you being here. When you met with him at the end, were you you were clear that he was not providing services as a psychologist, but was it as a counselor? Was it as a coach?
There was never like a change, like at least personally, like I thought. I just continued seeing. I think I continued seeing him past November, I think 4 times, up until the June 1st. Nothing ever was different. We never originally, I wasn't as concerned with like diagnostics, but there were situations that came up, that would entail like a psychologist, but I also not understanding how all of this works in the first place.
But did he let you know he wasn't a psychologist at that point, but that he was, what was he providing the services under, what umbrella? Like, did he let you know the last 4 visits where I'm a counselor, I'm a coach, I'm a psychologist? What was
the last time any of that was even just, it never was discussed. It was only that one email in November.
Okay, so it was in November when he transitioned to saying, I'm going to be more of a coach or counselor.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's all I needed.
Yep.
Thank you. Any additional questions for TB? Hearing none, we do have Dr. Padilla on the phone with us. Dr. Padilla, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself, and now would be a time to make a brief statement if you would like.
Sorry, did you ask me to make a brief statement?
Dr. Padilla, I can't hear him. Are you muted?
Yeah, I am also, he was on and now I'm not seeing him. I wonder if he got kicked off.
He was on a moment ago, Madam Chair, but it looks like he's no longer with us.
Yeah. All right. Well, I suppose we could continue. And if he joins us and would like to make a statement,
Okay. Dr. Davis-Wilson, can I request to go into executive session? I'd like to get legal advice about what our regulatorily what is under our preview here, since he's no longer licensed.
Absolutely. We have a motion. I will second that. We will be going, the request is to go into executive session for the purpose of legal advice. Dr. Padilla, I will come back. We have a motion on the table right now for executive session. I will come back and give you the opportunity to make a statement.
Okay.
All in favor?
Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson, I can envision a couple of scenarios where maybe hearing from Dr. Padilla would raise additional questions that may need legal advice. May I suggest respectfully that you may want to hear from him before executive session?
Absolutely. Ms. Shriver, are you okay with that?
Yes, that's great. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Dr. Padilla, if you would like to introduce yourself and make a brief statement, now would be a good time to do so.
Thank you. My name is Scott Padilla. I appreciate the opportunity to speak up. My understanding, based on the CSC and the summary that Dr. Gill's provided, is that the board is concerned that I am practicing as a psychologist and or holding myself out to be a psychologist, that is not appropriate or allowed or legal. So that my assertion is that I'm not doing that. I haven't been doing that. In November of 2020, I notified my active clients that I was no longer licensed. I had a large number of clients who decided to move on to get referrals elsewhere to discontinue seeing me, but there was a small handful of people who expressed an interest in continuing to see me in whatever capacity I could, that I wasn't allowed to call psychology or psychological services. So those active clients that I was seeing weekly received an actual formal letter that informed them that I was no longer licensed, that I'm no longer a psychologist, that I was very clear on what the change in my status meant, and had them sign that form, consenting to that. With TB, she provided the email where I informed her that I'm no longer a psychologist, I'm no longer licensed, that I'm not pursuing renewing it. I do acknowledge that I did not tell people that I had surrendered my license, that the conditions around my not having a license anymore was not something that I openly shared. And that was a lot to do with the fact that I had been advised by people in the field that wasn't necessary. And if there's a statute that says that I'm supposed to say that I'm no longer licensed because that I was unaware of, then I absolutely apologize and, am willing to admit to that infraction. But at no point was my goal or intent to deceive anybody, to pose myself as a psychologist. I clearly stated, even in the email to TB, that I'm no longer allowed to act as a psychologist or use that terminology. So the other point to all this is that I'm not interested anymore in this kind of work. I am currently bartending. I'm not interested in doing therapy in any capacity anymore. So I don't know what the ultimate goal here is beyond to make sure that I'm not practicing psychology unlicensed or proposing that I am a psychologist. And if a cease and desist letter is something that would be the outcome of this, I stand by my statement that Dr. Gill shared earlier that I've already ceased and desisted. So there's nothing to be concerned about. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Board members, do we have any questions for Dr. Padilla?
I do.
Dr. Katarina?
Dr. Padilla, I could see right now where you prefer to be bartending, but the future, we don't know if you may decide to go back to something else. I would like to know, how do you distinguish between psychological therapy, counseling, and coaching? What would be the difference in how you would function in your practice during a session?
So my approach was no longer geared towards any kind of diagnosis, any kind of psychological treatment. My mentality switched more to just a supportive, guiding kind of role, where, you know, the folks that were still wanting to talk to me were sharing what was going on, where they were headed, how things were going. And, you know, my role was, you know, very much an encourager. That sounds really awesome that's the track that you seem to be on. You know, have you considered this or that? But very much, you know, what I would envision, you know, like an actual, you know, a coach on a team would be the guiding, sort of encouraging, supportive role, versus, you know, having somebody trying to diagnose or come at it clinically.
Well, how would you distinguish between that and Rogerian therapy?
I feel like it's less of a reflective kind of situation, more just of a kind of collaborative, you know, we are on a team together, sort of aiming for a goal together.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, this is Jean Galvin. Just for the record, Ms. LaBoy has notified Ms. Pekkanen that she has left the meeting temporarily, just so our minutes administrator can note that she is not part of the meeting at this time. And apparently, when she did not vote the last time, she was off the meeting, so we can go back to that portion of the meeting to note for the minutes when she left. Thank you, and I apologize to interrupt.
Thank you. Do we have any additional questions for Dr. Padilla? Hearing none, we do have a motion and a second on the table. The motion is to go into executive session. For the purpose of legal advice, any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Hearing none, we will move into deliberations. Dr. Gill, would you like to start us off in deliberation?
Well, we reviewed this case in the screening committee, and we did refer to the board. There was significant concern because we felt that despite the fact that he's now saying that he doesn't want to be a counselor or a coach or anything akin to providing psychological services, there's still the risk that he may return. The problem, you know, is that he held himself out as a psychologist beyond the date in which he surrendered his license, even though, and he had a digital signature indicating the word psycho, which is in violation of the law. My thought is that he was in violation of the law, and he was in violation of the consent agreement, even though he's making amends reportedly to change that up to the current time. But it appears that a cease and desist letter appears appropriate under these circumstances, because he could always return to practice and a cease and desist letter would kind of make a statement from the board that appears appropriate under these circumstances. And I thank you.
Is that a motion?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to provide a cease and desist letter to Dr. Padilla, given his violation of the law, given his violation of the consent agreement.
Dr. Gill, just to clarify, your motion to issue a cease and desist orders for violations under 32.2084. Ms. Galvin, do we need to specify which subsection? You're muted.
Yes, please.
And that's, Dr. Gill, for reference, the statute's on page 128 of the file at the end.
You could go ahead and cite 2084C1 and 2.
And would subsection A be applicable, which indicates a person not licensed shall not engage in the practice of psychology?
Yes, that would be appropriate.
Then I will second the motion for violation of 32.2084A and then C1 and 2.
Correct.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Do we need a roll call vote?
You do not.
Okay. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
I'm not opposed.
The motion carries.
And Madam Chair, this is Ms. Poe. I'd like to go ahead and give out the next CE code word. The next CE code word is trick or treat, trick or treat. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We will now move to agenda item number 11. Agenda item number 11, Ms. Michelson, will you please provide us a summary of this?
Yes, Madam Chair, this is with respect to Dr. Dunbar's item. As the board may recall, Dr. Dunbar surrendered his psychologist license back in November of 2020 as a result of multiple complaints. Shortly after the board approved that consent agreement, the office received information from another psychologist indicating that Dr. Dunbar held himself out as a licensed psychologist during a job interview at her practice in Phoenix for the position of psychologist. This information was reviewed by the board at its meeting on February 12th of this year, and after deliberation, the board voted to issue a cease and desist order to Dr. Dunbar, given multiple violations under the 32.2084 statute. When the board reviewed this matter, it was noted that Dr. Dunbar had taken down the website for his practice, www.mentaledgepsych.com, once he was notified by staff of the concerns, and that he had also updated his social media profiles on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook that he currently had access to and had removed the clinical psychologist designation. It was noted that there were several other profiles on these platforms that had indicated Dr. Dunbar as a clinical psychologist, but Dr. Dunbar had represented to the board that he no longer had access to the email address associated with these counts in order to take those profiles down. Approximately 2 weeks ago, the board office received a typed letter in the mail from an anonymous individual, which indicated that Dr. Dunbar is continuing to practice psychology and holding himself out to the public as a licensed psychologist through his website, mentaledgepsych.com. On the same date this letter was received, I accessed the website, which was again active. It was noted that when I reviewed this website shortly before the board had issued the cease and desist order, a message had appeared on the website stating that it cannot be reached. However, it was fully active when I reviewed it 2 weeks ago. I noted under the services tab on the website, it stated that, quote, Dr. Dunbar specializes in psychological services and psychological and neuropsychological consultation. He currently sees clients in his Scottsdale office, although it is available to meet with clients on site as needed, end quote. The rates were listed below this information for in-office and out-of-office consultation. When I clicked on one of the buttons on the homepage, it opened up to another page where at the bottom, there was a short biography about Dr. Dunbar, which stated that he is a clinical neuropsychologist / sports psychologist and conducts a unique blend of sports psychology and neuropsychology. The cease and desist order that the board issued in February states that under the authority set in ARS 3227, subsection C, the board orders respondent to immediately cease and desist from holding himself out until lawfully able to practice psychology. If respondent continues to engage in such activities in violations of the board's rules and statutes, the board may pursue injunctive relief under this statute. Given that Dr. Dunbar may possibly not be in compliance with the terms of the cease and desist order, the board may wish to consider if it should pursue seeking an injunction in Superior Court. Ms. Galvin can certainly explain what that process would look like in more detail. And the board may also want to consider whether this information warrants a referral to law enforcement, such as to the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, given that statute specifies it is a Class 2 misdemeanor for an unlicensed individual to engage in the practice of psychology. Finally, I do want to note that I emailed Dr. Dunbar on September 16th regarding the concern that the website was active again and that the board would be reviewing this matter today. I have not received a response from him, so I do not know if he is present here today. That concludes my summary, but please let me know if there are any questions.
Thank you.
Can we go? This is, I'll make a motion to go to executive session, please.
Okay.
Before we go, let me just make sure. Dr. Dunbar, have you joined us? Dr. Dunbar, if you are on the phone, please unmute yourself. All right, hearing nothing, we can proceed. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Do we have thoughts or comments on how we would like to proceed? Oh, Ms. Galvin is back.
I would make a motion. I think there's concerns. He isn't licensed by us any longer, but the website was clear that he was offering services in Scottsdale, potentially. I mean, that's what it said. So that is concerning that possibly, you know, he's in Scottsdale or he's coming to Scottsdale. It's unclear to us. But what we do know is he's not licensed to practice in this state. So I would, and we've done, I think, as a board, pretty much everything we can do in regards to the concerns we've had in the past with this psychologist. I would make a motion that we pursue an injunction through the Attorney General's office or the Sheriff's office. I'm not, you know, whichever is the right, you know, arena, or look at both of them and to pursue that against Dr. Dunbar.
It's my understanding that we have an option to that, refer for, you know, the violation of a crime to the appropriate authorities. That's separate from an injunction. Is that true?
That is separate. Two different options available.
I would be in favor of the latter.
So I believe it could be and or seeking an injunction and or referral to law enforcement.
That is correct.
Then I would make my motion that we pursue an injunction and a referral to law enforcement to see, you know, and again, we know that when we pursue that, they will then make their determination, whoever we send it to, is whether they feel that there's enough evidence to go ahead and proceed from there.
We can hope for the best. I second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We will now move to agenda item number 12. Ms. Pacano, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. This item was scheduled for this agenda at the request of the board. I believe that the purpose of doing so was to review the communications that are issued to temporary license applicants and also the communications that are issued once the applicant becomes is awarded or granted the temporary license. So what Ms. Folks and I collaborated on was to provide, assemble those template documents and then provide commentary to the specific words or phrases or sections that we think there may be an opportunity to be more clear. They have been identified by temporary license holders recently as being confusing or even incorrect. And so I believe that what we're going to do is review those passages and discuss them to see if there is an opportunity to better present that information. And depending on when you access this information in the Google folder or on the portal, you may or may not have seen the actual comments that were inserted to the PDF. Earlier this week, I checked the document and I did see those comments. However, this morning, Kathy and I realized that the comments had disappeared. So we've reloaded that documentation to the Google folder and to the portal. And what I'm prepared to do, if it's helpful, is to go through each page, each document, and each section and identify what the comments were that were inserted by staff. Does the board wish for me to do that?
Yes, I think that that would be helpful.
Very good, Madam Chair. And I would invite Ms. Folks to augment anything that that I neglect to say in the process. So I think we're going to start with the assembly of the document that is 11 pages. The first page of which is a letter dated August 18, 2020, issued to an applicant with the, I'm sorry, temporary license holder with the
Can
first-
Can you tell us the item number, please?
I'm sorry?
There's several item numbers. I'm looking at the agenda. There's 12C?
Yes. The title is Temporary License Notices, Mouse Over.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. I'll give you a moment to get there. So again, the first page is dated August 18, 2020. In the subject line of this particular notice, it indicates that it's approval for a temporary license. So the purpose of this letter is merely to inform the recipient that this notice is specific to the temporary license. It doesn't indicate anything with respect to any future license. So I think that that needs to be noted, that this letter only addresses what has been granted to this individual, which is a temporary license. And we know from the conversations that have been held on the subject at previous meetings that by the statute construction, a temporary license is very distinct from an initial license. Does that make sense? Any questions about that? So moving forward, the next comment again states the date of approval. The first sentence of that letter, the comment reflects that this is the date of approval and the specific type of application approved. And then in the second paragraph, the sentence that states this approval is for ECCC Part 1 only. You are not required to take ECCC Part 2. Once again, this comment is made only specific to what the letter addresses, which is the temporary license. It's not intended in any way to be extrapolated to any future application that this individual may or may not file with the board. Any questions about that?
I can see where that might be confusing, though.
Yeah, I see that.
Because that's, you know, it's like you're not required to take the ECCC Part 2. I would have read that, go, oh, awesome, I'm just taking the Part 1.
Madam Chair, I see that. So maybe the letter could be edited to say you are not required to take ECCC Part 2 for purposes of this temporary license.
But you would need to retain a license. I think you need to make it clear. We need to make it clear that not for the temporary, but for a full license, you will. And, you know, maybe a new sentence at ECCC Part 2 will be needed at a, for, you know.
to get.
Yeah, I mean, do they have to take part one? I mean, that's something that they do while they're temporary license, but they get the license without taking part one, correct?
That's what I thought.
So you're issued a license without taking part one. We encourage them to take part one and we tell them this is not required. I mean, therein lies the confusion, even though it is for the temporary license, because the temporary license does not require part one either. We do issue a temporary license. We give them you have to complete the exam within 6 months?
It says a year.
Oh, Heidi, do we not have sort of two categories, those who apply for temporary license and those who apply for temporary license and authorization to take ACCP Part 1?
Madam Chair, Ms. Galvin, that is my understanding. I believe that is how that distinction would be represented, you know, on first the ARC agenda and then the board.
And if the example you've given us for Dr. Kraft, it says approval for temporary license / ACCP upon payment of license fee. So this person applied for the temporary license and permission to take ACCP Part 1. And what this letter does is confirm that for you wanted your temporary license, here it is, and you've asked for permission to take Part 1. You've been granted that permission. You don't have to take Part 2 at this time because you've just applied for Part 1.
Except we specifically state you are not required, but as opposed to saying,
right,
this is not approval for Part 2.
Right. I mean, I could see where people could be confused by this. And I wouldn't know that if I asked for a temporary one, then I would have to later take the Part 2 as opposed if I didn't. And the next letter is, the next example is just for each to sit for the ACCP Part 1. You're not required to take the ACCP Part 2. I would think, oh, great, I made the deadline.
It doesn't say this is not an approval to take ACCP Part 2. And this person when did this doctor, this particular example, Dr. D, when did she apply? Was it also before November 1?
Madam Chair, Dr. Millat, yes.
Okay.
This person applied before the deadline.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Madam Chair, one of the suggestions too that board staff wanted to offer that maybe this template could be better clarified if we added a sentence, this approval, whatever the approval may consist of in this letter, but this approval is specific only to the current application. With future applications, you will need to meet all established requirements then in place as established by statute.
I think that's great for future, but I think we still need to discuss. I know I've said things in the past, the status of these 17 or 11 or 14, where?
I mean, I feel the same as Dr. Millat, and I would actually, Heidi, be a little more specific in the letters. Like, if you say, hey, you've got to do this now, but you're gonna have to do whatever's required later. I guess I feel like if I was a student, I'd be like, well, what would that be? I mean, I just think we need to be a little bit more clear. We know what those requirements are. I mean, why don't we just say it?
Madam Chair, Ms. Shreve, I totally understand what you're saying. To some degree, staff can do those things, but we never know what requirements might be in place, you know, in a year or 18 months. We may have new requirements established by the legislature. We could not say as of March of last year whether in January of 2022 the fingerprint clearance card would be a requirement because, of course, our legislation was pending at the time. So to some degree, you know, we can tell applicants, here are the statutes that establish the requirements now, but we have to just sort of advise applicants that be aware of whatever the requirements are at the time you apply. And then, as Ms. Galvin has said, we also have to somehow promote the understanding too that if you have an open application, if a new requirement is established, you're subject to meet that too. Is that correct?
I think we have two different matters here. Okay, yeah. We have the issue of how do we word so students are, applicants are aware the requirements may change. And we can work on that language and maybe staff can and come up with all encompassing without going through the requirements. I totally agree. We don't need to specify the requirements. We can say, please note that each time you submit an application, it is maybe subject to new requirements by the board. But that's a separate matter. I think we're going back to those 17 applicants who received this communication, which was sent by the board, which has created this confusion. I think everybody, especially new applicants, are very aware of that November 1 deadline where the part two was going to be required. It was front and center. I heard conversations in the hallways saying, hey, apply before November 1, because then you won't be subject to part two. Apply before number one. And it was never made clear that temporary license holders would have different standards. You know, so people were well aware of it. I've heard conversations trying to meet that November 1 deadline. So, and then the letter says that too. You are not required to take part two. And then we come back and say, nope, you are required because now you're applying for a new license. I think that's what we need to focus on. We can focus on the language that needs to be part of letters that go out, but maybe we need to just talk about those 17 people.
Dr. Malott, this is only one of many communications that goes to the temporary license holders. And if what I'm hearing you say is that there's two issues, there's the communications and then there's the 17 temporary license holders. What's on the agenda today is the communications that were sent to the potential.
I thought both were on because we wanted to look at the communication
and
see where this confusion came from. And to me, I can see where it came from when I looked at the communication.
There's other communications that might help, you know, quell some of your concerns about whether this is clear or not.
I do. So if we can't talk about it today, I'm with Dr. Malott. I want to make sure that we discuss it. I mean, we have been confronted by our constituents, you know, we're a regulatory agency saying there's a concern. Let's look into it. And either we feel like, yeah, we you know, in good faith, we made a good decision, or we need to look at it. But I definitely think it's a discussion we need to have. And I can see, too, if I got that letter, I'd be like, oh, well, I knew that November first date was it. Now, look, I don't have to take the ETTT, you know, part two. I just want to make sure that we are all comfortable with the decisions we made with, you know, with that. And I think we've been asked by our constituents. I think we need to have that discussion. And if we stand on it, we stand, you know, we stay where we are, but I think we need to look at it.
So Ms. Shreve, what we'll have to do is we'll have to add that. We'd have to review that to be added to a future agenda. All we have the ability to speak on today is just the documentation. And I do think that it may be beneficial to allow for Heidi to go through all of the documentation just that they have presented for us so that we can kind of see what their vision of it is. And then we can talk to what immediate recommendations we have for future communications. And then the other issue will have to be added to a future agenda.
So based on what I'm seeing here, I do think that we could say something. This is for the temporary licensing only. There will be new requirements for a permanent licensor. Something very direct, maybe specific.
Madam Chair, yes. I'm going to make sure Ms. Folks is capturing all of the edits that you're suggesting for our documents.
I think, you know, upon application for a regular license or permanent license, whatever the title is for that license, your application will be subject to all requirements currently in statute at the time of your application.
Right. But I think it also needs to say, I definitely agree that this refers only to the temporary license somewhere, even though it says it in the regarding on top. I think they need to see that specifically.
Right. Looking at page 7, Because what you see is there's a, this, I think it's just this common theme. If you look at the bottom of page 7, EPPP is highlighted in bold. And it says, you've been notified, you see, that you are authorized to sit for the EPPP Part 1 college. You're not required to take the EPPP Part 2 skills.
That's a second communication.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, yes. So this letter, again, is in the subject line. It's specific to the temporary license.
Right.
The paragraph number 1, 2, 3, I guess I'll call it 4, the highlighted text, which is also in bold, the temporary license is not in any way or at any time transferred to an independent license. If in the future you wish to be licensed as an independent psychologist in Arizona, you will need to apply anew, through the application fee, and meet all requirements.
Why couldn't we put that in the first letter?
Right, but I agree with that. I like that, Heidi. But when you get down to the bottom of that letter, you have EPPP, and I like, okay, here's EPPP information, and it says you're not required to take EPPP Part 2 skills. So
I think that second sentence should just be removed.
Yeah, just remove it. It just, to me, it's just misleading. I would think, oh, great, I am not required to take it. I don't know if I'd necessarily relate it just to the temporary.
Yeah, I don't.
Mm-hmm. I just think that that's confusing because it's actually pointed at them. You do not need to, you are not required.
Yes, thank you for that suggestion.
Maybe it should say, since you applied prior to the November 1st deadline for your permanent licensure, you are not required.
I wouldn't get.
Since you specifically applied prior to the November 1st, you are not
required. No, they are required.
They are required.
Well, that's the problem. But,
okay.
And you don't have any more. It's just those 17. Because from now on, we are under the new requirement of everyone's required to take Part 2.
But back to my November 1st, that was if they had applied for the permanent licensure prior to November 1st, is what I'm saying.
It's just not clear.
Okay.
Do we face the prospect of lawsuits from these 17?
Mm-hmm. I think that's not relevant
right now.
Yeah.
I think we have to steer away from all conversations related to the 17 individuals, as that is not agendized. Okay. So we can talk strictly about the communication and what expectations we have moving forward. I recognize that perhaps moving forward, this particular line of communication would not apply. However, I am hearing that perhaps when we are sending those notices that we should caution providing prescriptive information about what is required or not required at a future time. So I think the board staff has been very cautious to not provide information that might predict the future. But I'm hearing from board members that perhaps that statement of EPPP Part 2 may have also been restrictive in the amount of information that it shared in what was then perceived. Addition to that, I believe Dr. Catarino has suggested perhaps highlighting and or making making sure that the documentation in matters similar to these clearly outline at the onset of the documentation that that this information does not apply to future applications or to future things. So I think that those would be some of the, at least based on this specific agenda item, those are the notes that I would direct board staff then to be sure that they are cognizant of in future communications regarding any matter, right? I recognize that this particular matter, we won't need more letters like this, but for future communications. As it pertains to communications, are there any other suggestions or comments or any requests to have Ms. Pakanon review any other points of the communication to the board?
And Madam Chair, if there are no more suggestions to the actual communications, I do want to make sure we address the guidance document containing the matrix of scenarios that the board reviewed and approved. So I want to make sure we get to that. So, too.
I just go back to page 9. Page 9, I think, states it like it should be. They say EPPP, ASP has been notified. You authorized to sit for the EPPP. You will receive an email within 1 day. I mean, that, you know, doesn't say you're not required. And there's nothing, I mean, I don't see much wrong with the last one, 11. But the other page that was concerned was that line needs to go away.
Mm-hmm.
You are not required to take EPPP part two. I mean, ASB has been noticed that you are authorized to sit for the EPPP part one knowledge. So.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I think that the intent was to try to be clear about, again, we are talking about your temporary license. For purposes of your temporary license, here is what you need to know. Without, again, sort of making any assumptions or any extrapolations to—
And we get that, yeah. Mm-hmm. What else do we need to look at? I know we're running, I'm looking at the clock too, so.
If there are no more questions or comments about the correspondence, then I'm happy to move to the matrix.
Okay.
One moment.
Madam Chair, committee members, this is Kathy. I also uploaded current versions of the letters that are being sent out regarding the EPPP. Most of them are the EPPP score letters, but if you want to see and advise me about what you would like to see in them different, I would really welcome that advice and that counsel. Thank you.
And the sample letter that she's referring to is the one, the sample is dated September 7th, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Do any psychologists have any feedback that they would like to share?
So who receives this form?
Madam Chair, Dr. Malott, which one?
The one that we're looking at right now?
Well, there's 12D, E, F, and G.
Enhance EPPP scenarios and answers.
Oh, you're looking at the matrix. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Madam Chair, I can speak to that document. This was content that we had presented to the board, as you probably recall. I think it was July of 2020. possibly prior to that for purposes of reviewing and approving, so we could share this guidance on our website, share it with stakeholders and so forth. So one of the takeaways that we have experienced from sharing this material is that, and I apologize, these lines should be numbered, but it's line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The statement, a temporary license holder whose temporary license application was received before November 1, 2020 and fails the exam requests to retake the exam on or after November 1, 2020, that has been construed by temporary license applicants, temporary license holders, to mean they are not subject to the Part 2 requirement. However, it's the lines that follow that address when the initial application is received on or after November 1, that those are the entries that are germane to this situation, because an initial application is an application filed under 32-2071. It is not the temporary license, which is a different statute. It is specific to the first unrestricted license. So what I think we could have done better with respect to this matrix is we could have provided the statute citations to make that distinction more clear. I did question to the word choice of initial application, but that is the language that is in board rule. So I think those two lines have sort of been overlooked perhaps, or were not understood by some to have been germane to their situation, that they would be applying for their first initial license as a psychologist, not the temporary license, but their first license as a psychologist on or after November 1 of 2020. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And perhaps if the language aligns with the rule, I mean, perhaps we should note reviewing that with some of the rule writing, because that's one of the solutions that when I look at like the documents that Ms. Folks just pointed out, like I think being able to say initial application versus temporary application may kind of resolve some of the conflict, but that would involve having to, because right now it's aligned with rule, but we might want to look at implications of potentially considering a rule change to just help clarify that a little bit more. Because it is confusing. And as somebody who isn't a psychologist, I can definitely see how each of the, you know, different applications and entry points can be confusing.
Yes, Madam Chair, I agree. And I think that also what I neglected to say previously, there is a notation to refer to B below initial application. This is referring to the standard application, psychologist application for exam and or licensure. Psychologists applying for licensure by credential, you are excluded from this matrix. We could make that more clear too by explaining under the footnote B, this is not a temporary license. This is your first unrestricted independent license for which you are applying.
So I got a question. So on the very first one, it says an applicant who's been approved by the board to test prior to November 1st. So if they put in a temporary license with the approval to take the EPPP, then they wouldn't have had to take then they don't have to take the
part. Yeah, if they've done an initial license as opposed to a temporary license,
But it doesn't say initial license. It says an applicant has been approved by the board to test prior to November 1st. So some of those were as a temporary license with the approval to take the EPPP.
Maybe it should say an applicant for independent licensure.
Right. But see, I mean, if I was an applicant, I'm putting in my temporary license as an applicant. I mean, I could see how you could read it differently. And I've asked to take the test, which I got approved for too, to take the test with my temporary license. It doesn't distinguish between what kind of applicant that is. So, and in essence, if you did apply just to take the test without a temporary license, then you didn't have to take the part two.
It's after the.
So yeah, I think that anyway, so I guess that's another discussion next month about how this applies to those. But I could see how you could look at that.
And Madam Chair, just I think because of the confusion and because really, as I think it was Dr. Malott had pointed out, we're sort of past the point now where sort of, you know, anyone would be by virtue of where we are with the calendar, right. I don't even know that this matrix is even useful any longer. So,
And Heidi, can I just say to you and the board members, I mean, this is absolutely no criticism at all, because I mean, I don't think a lot of us thought about this. I mean, when we made this originally, you know, a lot of us like, okay, how can this come, you know, be misinterpreted, or how, you know, it was a transition that, you know, I don't think you see every little bit, but I mean, I think we've all done the best we can.
And I would add to that, I think, you know, the matrix, while it may not be applicable, if it's another tool to help kind of delineate the different types of applications, even if all the qualifications are the same amongst two or three of them, just to make sure it's consistent, because 2 years from now, there might be, a caveat for a temporary license or a caveat for an initial license. And that's, I think, where the confusion is that understanding that they're different applications.
Yes, and Madam Chair, I think that one of the takeaways from the recent Rules Committee, and I know we won't be able to talk about the Rules Committee's recommendations today, but just some foreshadowing that there is probably a lot of discussion that needs to be held, not about this issue necessarily, but there's some other language in that rule specific to temporary license applicants that I think warrants some attention and possibly some edits for clarity.
I think really my hope was when we asked for this item to be put on the agenda was really to discuss, look at the communication in light of the 17, not to look at the communication in light of the communication. So I think both staff, you know, I mean, I think it's great to get our feedback, but I'd like to go ahead and put this agenda item on our next board meeting for new items. And based on the communication, the select number received, you know, what can we do to help our license, you know, our future licensees who, you know, in good faith arrived at that conclusion. So I'd like for us to look for potential solutions. So that's the agenda item I would like for the next meeting.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. And I would like to clarify with that, and then we can move forward, that the review of the communication was the ask of the board staff. And the board staff did go in and review the minutes and the recordings to make sure that they were.
No, I'm taking responsibility for that. I guess I wasn't made it very clear. So I'm trying to be very clear right now that at the next meeting, we will discuss those 17 in light of the communication. So.
And I would support that.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
Another thing, as part of this discussion, at some point, I mean, every single meeting we're getting several of them commenting. Do we invite some stakeholders to listen into that conversation and when it's going to be timed or when it's going to be set on the agenda?
I don't think until we've made a decision. Because we know their point of view, they've given it.
Dr. Davey, I think they are in communication with the executive director.
Okay.
Enough so that they know what's on the agenda. And just to clarify, Dr. Malott, you want to speak about the status of temporary license holders who were recently informed about having to take ACCP Part 2. You don't want to discuss individually the 17 applicants. I mean, do we have to notice the 17 applicants?
I don't think we need to notice the 17. But it is that select group of people that have been impacted.
It's just a category of licensure. It's not the applications themselves.
Well, yes.
Okay. But Dr. Malott, are you suggesting that we possibly look at how maybe changing how we their requirement to take the ECCC part two?
Yeah, I'd like it to be a discussion and action item, you know, regarding the requirement to take the ECCC part two in light of the communication they received.
And I think that is clear. You said to discuss the 17 applications, and that's different.
Okay.
I think staff and I understand. I just want to be clear so we're not noticing 17 people.
No. All right. Thanks for that, Ms. Galvin. I can see the difference there.
But whatever decision we take could have impact on those 17, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. But we're not discussing each one individually. So.
Right.
Thank you.
And it's not unlike, I know I can't discuss, but I just want to make a point. We had a similar situation with regards to our renewal application, and we did come up with a solution. So I'm hoping we can be thinking of solutions too. So
thank you.
A couple of years ago, and we did a blanket.
All right, I believe that no motion is needed. I think we have a consensus on how to move forward. We can now move to, Ms. Pakadon, you mentioned we might not get to the rules conversation. Did you want to suggest a specific agenda item?
I know Dr. Berry's online, is it?
Okay, then let's do agenda item number 17 with Dr. Emily Berry. Dr. Malott, you are the lead for this application.
I'm just checking. Do I see her? I saw her.
Madam Chair, we actually have an update for you relative to this application. We received it only late yesterday. Dr. Berry has requested that this matter be rescheduled to a future agenda. She has elected to retain legal representation for this matter. And so I told her that it was too late to change the agenda. And so I would propose this request to the board for the board to decide about a scheduling in the future.
I'm okay with that.
All right. Are we in consensus to table this item to the next meeting?
Very good. We will notify Dr. Berry, and we will place her matter on the November 5th agenda, and we'll still need her letter of representation and their agreement that they're available that day.
Okay.
Would you like to, Ms. Pakadon, cover item number 15, regulatory issues relative to COVID?
I can do that very quickly, Madam Chair. I don't have any updates to share at this time. This item can remain on the agenda just for purposes of when there is information to share that is significant and the board may want to consider and take action on, then at that time we can do so.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for Ms. Pakadon?
And I believe that I can cover 13 and 14 very quickly too. I'm sensitive to when Dr. Malott needs to leave, at which time I think we probably lose our quorum. So if you'd like, I can proceed with the 13.
Perfect. Yes, if you could please give us a summary of item number 13.
Yes, thank you. The Rules Committee, as you saw in my memorandum, did meet recently. I believe it was the 22nd of September. And they do have a series of recommendations that they would like to bring forward and also some items that they felt required full board discussion and input. When we knew that this meeting had to be a bit truncated, we changed this agenda item to reflect only that we probably need to schedule a special meeting for the review of the proposed changes. It seems that the upcoming meeting agendas are going to be as full as they have been with lots of investigative matters and other policy matters. So I think that probably what I need to do next is send out a poll for the members to indicate availability for a special meeting. Do I have any comments or questions or feedback to that suggestion?
I think that's a lovely suggestion. So we will expect a poll for you. And I think that it's a good opportunity to just focus on one matter and move along instead of the juggling of the agendas that we've had to do. So is anybody in opposition of that suggestion?
Yeah, I think I'm in full support of it. I think as we just realized how important our rules are and the language and the wording, and that, you know, we take the time to go at it line by line. So
I agree. All right. We can move now to agenda item 14. Ms. Kavanaugh, can you please provide us an overview?
Yes, again, quickly, I did receive confirmation this morning that all of the connections have been made with respect to, excuse me, the website through which registry applications will be accepted, to the payment portal, to the state accounting system. So now that we have all the connections at last in place, I would expect we're going to be able to accept registry applications soon. Thus far, I have had only two inquiries of that kind, and I only know of one other board who has received an actual application, and that is the physical therapy board, who received one earlier this week. So I do think that the registry is going to be a little slow to ramp up, but perhaps over time, once information becomes more available about this opportunity, it may be that we see many such applications coming to your future agendas. And I can answer any questions you might have on that topic.
This is Dinah. I wanted to commend our staff and Ms. Pakkanen for their leadership on this issue.
Madam Chair, thank you so much for that. I also will add that you may have noticed in my, I think it was last month's executive director's report, where I had requested yet another possible appropriation approval to expand our staffing level should we need to because of the registry. And I've received a few questions around clarifying that request from the Governor's Office of Strategic Planning and Budget. So I hope that's a good sign that we will have the permission to, again, grow our staff if the registry applications do take off to the same degree that our temporary emergency licenses have. We are now very close to 600 psychologist applications of that kind, and we are close to 40 behavior analyst applications, or licensees, I should say, on the temporary emergency authorizations that we've been granted under COVID-19.
Thank you. That's incredible. All right. And thank you for all of your guys' hard work, because that is a lot of extra processing that you guys have had to do. So thank you for taking the lead on that.
My pleasure.
All right, we will move to agenda item number 18. Are there any agenda items for future meetings?
Ms. Pakkanen, you think we'd be ready to update the board on the other item that we've been, the subcommittee? I'm just wondering where we were.
Oh, Madam Chair, Dr. Malott, the EPPP early entry discussion. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was one item that we moved to November because of the precarious quorums.
Oh, okay.
And also, I want to ensure that Dr. Flint is able to fully participate given some recent events. So I wasn't certain of her availability today, but I can also, if you think we're ready, I can invite Dr. Matt Turner to also come and speak to that issue. The BARC committee, so that's the committee of board and registrar administrators, they will potentially be talking about this issue on October 4th, I think it is, 4th or 6th, now I can't remember, early next week. Oh. So it may be that this, because this is on the radar of ASPPB, they'll be prepared to enlighten us.
Okay, good. So then November would be a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Malott, I can arrange that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional items?
Heidi, are we going to have Ms. Oswig also come before the board and talk about, I'm not sure what, but was she to educate us into regarding ASPBB issues?
Like the plus?
At the plus, yes. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair. I had tentatively arranged that with Ms. Orwig. That program has gone through an evolution. It's a program that the Arizona Board has long wanted to participate in. For some time, we were precluded from doing so because of the language in our administrative rule. We changed the rule. They put a timeout on the PLUS program in terms of accepting new jurisdictions. They are rolling out really three options now. And I don't know, I feel I need direction from this board on how and whether to move forward with that participation. I think in the interest of promoting license mobility, we probably want to some degree. I just think we need to hear from the program administrator to make the best decision.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Any additional agenda items? Hearing none, we will move on. I believe we've covered everything. Do we have any motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Thank you, everyone. Thank you for accommodating schedules and all of the work to get this meeting together. So I appreciate it. So.
Are there any oppositions? Hearing none, the motion does carry. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Great job, everyone.
Bye-bye.